This episode of our This Week in XR podcast is sponsored by Zapper. Zapper is one of the world's leading XR companies. Over the past 12 years, they've won numerous awards for memorable campaigns. They've democratized AR by making tools and SDKs that anyone can use. And they created Zapbox, the world's most affordable mixed reality headset. Most recently, Zapper worked with Unilever to create an enhanced QR code called Accessible QR, which enables packaged goods to speak to the blind and partially sighted. If you're thinking XR, give the team at Zapper a call or visit zapper.com to see how they can help you on your XR journey. Good morning, everybody. I'm Charlie Fink with Rony Abovitz for This Week in XR. It is May 3rd, 2024. Ted is in a car trying to get on a network so he can join us. So hopefully he'll pop in during the first 5 or 10 minutes of the podcast. We have some terrific guests today, actually friends of Ted. So I hope he calls in so that we can... Yeah. Have a chat with Jennifer Tuft and Cassandra Rosenthal, the co-CEOs and founders of the AR company Kaleidico. So let's get to the news, Rony.
Hey, before we jump in there, Charlie, can we say one thing? Like the promise of 5G, which is, you know, relative to this, when I was working on Magic Leap, you know, 2015, 2016, we were cutting deals with telcos. By the 2020s, by 21, 22, 5G was going to be gigabit up and down everywhere. It was going to be amazing. Ted's in the car trying to find signal.
Yeah, really, how much has changed?
It'll eventually happen. But
the top story this week is that Alden Global, which owns the Daily New York Daily News and Chicago Tribune, as well as other San Jose Mercury News and other well-known publications, has sued OpenAI. Joining the New York Times and other publishers in holding them accountable for breaching firewalls in order to steal what was clearly their private content that they are charging people for and therefore hurting their business. So this is obviously not good news for OpenAI. I think they would rather pay all these people and not fight. They've got a good fair use argument. You know, it's not clear that these, even with the untasteful acts that the companies willfully committed, it is unclear that they are going to lose this battle, or if they do lose it, be sanctioned very much. Also, this is a company that should be, by the time all this comes to fruition 5 years from now, this should be one of the richest companies in the world. So I don't know how they're going to find them in a way that's going to be meaningful to anybody. So I think the companies that have settled with them are wise.
Yeah, I mean, this is an issue, Charlie, we talk about a lot, but I find it to be incredibly distasteful, the attitude that because I'm big, I have eminent domain to all of your data knowledge. And it feels like there's this like roughshodding of everybody versus like, you know, a proper licensing and ask and acceptance versus take, it's in my tarball and you don't have a choice. And I have a big question, like maybe the US government listens to this, who knows, but like, why is the government not stepping in and saying, our job is to protect the small and the weak from the big and the powerful? And you're supposed to have rights. You're supposed to have rights to your IP, to your copyrights, your trademarks, your patents. But unless you have billions of dollars, it's almost impossible to defend yourself.
But isn't that the whole lesson of what we're watching in the news every day, that the rich and powerful cannot be held to account in this country? It's something we all sort of knew on some level, but here it is pounding us on the head every day that the rich are not equal to regular people in this country. And they are literally and figuratively above the law. The IRS doesn't sue people who deserve to be sued because it would be too much trouble, take too long, and cost too much.
Since Ted is still in the car, we can go there a little bit, Charlie. But this is what's great about the show. But the U.S. needs to recalibrate against its founding principles and make them true, like equality under the law.
Yes.
Right. And the idea that a president is above the law, I could practically guarantee you. I wasn't there. You weren't there. But George Washington would have said, BS. Like, that's not why we ran away from the monarchs to then recreate it. He walked away from being made a king.
Yeah.
And I think that lesson needs to be front and center in everything that's going on, which is like the rich and powerful were the monarchs. We came here to not have that happen in this country, right? That was the whole idea.
I'm not sure that democracy and the internet are compatible. And I think that is the fundamental problem that we are up against, is that the U.S. Constitution is something that is really kind of immutable and very slow and difficult to change. But in a time of massive disruption, we need to have flexibility and we need to be able to adjust the system to new realities. And we're just not capable of that. I'm hoping the EU with a parliamentary system will have a better chance of reforming. But I'm getting more and more cynical because this is just
Charlie. That's your new book.
Yeah,
you know, the internet and democracy are not compatible. No, it sounds like a great book title.
Okay, Ted is coming in.
Hi guys.
Hey,
hello.
There you are.
Hey, the miracle of 5G acting as 2G.
The miracle of I actually do have 5G. How are you guys doing?
Oh, wow. It's so lifelike. It's like you're in the room with us.
I know. Can you hear me okay, or should I put headphones in?
No, you're okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
I was giving Roni FOMO about our chat with Yatsuyu on Monday night.
It was fun. It was very, very
what a smart guy. What a smart guy.
Philosophically fascinating guy. I agree.
I was the whole time we were talking to him, I thought, I need more intellectual firepower for this guy. Where is Brony? Yeah.
We need more cowbell, as we would say.
I'm the cowbell at times.
So we're wrapping up the news before we bring your friends in. I'm glad you're here, since Cassandra and her co-founder are your pals. Wanted to talk about the Rabbit. There was a lot of controversy about Roni's favorite AI device, the Rabbit R1.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't remember, it was introduced with great fanfare at CES. It's $200. They've sold about 100,000 of them already with virtually no marketing. And it is an AI assistant in your pocket. Leave your cell phone behind. It's got all your apps in there. You've gone to their website called The Rabbit Hole, and you've hooked up all your apps, Spotify, your bank account, whatever, with your password. And now you've got this one-touch audio thing with just a little teeny tiny display that you don't really need because you're doing all AI. So it's being shipped this week. So the reviews came out. And I don't know, Roni, how would you characterize the reviews of the Rabbit R1?
Not stellar.
I think... They're being incredibly cruel and destroying the company is what I see, which is, if you think about the evolution of any computing device from the Apple One onward, if the press was this cruel and this hateful and attackful on the first of something, none of these companies would ever had the chance to get on their knees and do anything, you know, get off the ground, on your knees, stand up, walk. There's an expectation that you go right to iPhone 10 or you suck. And that means only the biggest companies with 10th generation products have a chance of getting anywhere. Like Apple is getting it in the face too with the Vision Pro. It's not the 10th generation. It's the first. And they're coming way after a lot of others. And they're still getting pretty much beat up. Like if you look at the recent press where like after the initial surge, they you know, the early adopters have dropped. It's because it's a Gen 1. There's a lot of issues. We talked about that at South By. I think, like, the Rabbit, I love Teenage Engineering. I love the company that designed it. It's a cool concept car. Someone is going to implement what it does. Someone's going to implement the pin, right? What's our friend?
The humane pin that was likewise skewered when it was released.
Someone's going to... Right. The idea that there's a device with computer vision and sensing and AI that's with you will get re-embodied in a lot of forms. The question is, like, the press attacks small players who are trying to get going so mercilessly and give them no benefit of the doubt. The only people left will be the richest and most powerful oligarch companies on the planet. And that's not really why, that's not the promise of America, right? That's not the promise of come here, build a startup in your garage and go to then get slaughtered by the press. And when I was a kid, I grew up with like the Stephen Levy's and the Kevin Kelly's, who were fair, but they were supportive. They weren't like out to just chop your knees off as soon as you get going. You know, there's no like curation and building. I don't know. We're ranting right now, but
you were the one who was super critical of the R1 and thought it was full of security flaws and that the only way they could justify the $200 price was by robbing you somehow.
Yeah, I was pretty harsh.
Shrugs.
But I love teenage engineering. I'll just put that out.
Here's the question. What happened to the days of the developer kit? Of the
right, wait a second. You do sound terrible. Put your headphones on.
I sound terrible? All right.
That Ted was asking what happened to the developer kit. And that was, of course, what we were talking about on stage at South by Southwest, right? This is the Apple Vision Pro is a terrific developer kit, but should not have been marketed to consumers as Apple's next platform. And I think they made a critical mistake marketing this as if it was an iWatch and thinking that everybody, this is a product everybody in the world should know about. So right. The Apple machine kicked into high gear. Nobody on the planet has not heard of the Vision Pro, but it is not ready for consumers, for consumer use. There aren't enough apps, as we've discussed. The hardware is a first generation and really needs a second generation because they made kind of some obvious mistakes that are not that hard to correct. They could move compute onto the external battery, you know, as Magic Leap and others have done. You know, they can get the weight better, get the headset lighter and make the weight better distributed. So all things you would expect in a developer kit. And so,
my question to Roni is the culture of innovation, the idea that it requires some gestation and that investors should understand that when you start to work on new product categories or, you know, slightly new innovation categories or new things that need some time to kind of work through the kinks, right? Why do investors, and Roni, I think your perspective on this is really salient because of your life with Magic Leap. Why do investors try and force the issue so much when it is much to their detriment to force the issue that they should let things develop? It's like a fine wine, right? You cannot just release it a month after you put it in the barrel. You have to let it cook and sit for a while and let people figure it out. What happened to that culture?
So Ted, let me give you two takes. I'm right in the middle of it right now with SynthBee. So I'm in that new startup mode again. But let me give you the best answer that I've ever gotten. So a friend is a really, really amazing, legendary record producer named Chris Blackwell. So if you guys have ever heard of Bob Marley, Island Records, U2, you know, that's him, right? He's like the Gandalf of music. He's amazing. and at the beginning of Magic Leap, I talked to him about this. I went to GoldenEye. It's a whole story. He's amazing. He's cool. He's in his 80s now. But the bottom line is, I said, how did you know how to let your artists incubate, which is the exact same thing, right? Like when U2 was discovered, I actually met the guys who discovered U2 for Chris, and he met them. He's like, yeah, like it was literally like that kind of thing. But he saw there was a spark and he knew that you have to give them time, just like you said, Ted, to soak, to develop, to grow. And he created that safe space and they became one of the biggest bands in the world and still are. And they're incredible. And I think that is not happening with a lot of startups. What you're told today is like, here's a round. If you don't have product market fit, we're taking you out back and you're done. Like there's this mismatch between, you know, the old style A&R guys and the old style A&R VC guys, you know, like a John Doerr from Kleiner, like the ones that really would incubate someone in the garage. That does not seem to really be happening. It's like, let me quickly flip you to somebody. It's much more like LP rapid monetization. And I get that they're financial ROI focused, but the great American venture was not that. It was finding brilliant people that were building the next thing and focus on it, let it soak and let it grow. And it will eventually become something massive. And I think like we have these incredible companies because of that.
So we have,
and that seems to be like a lot less today. People are here.
We've got our guests, our guests, Jennifer Tuft and Cassandra Rosenthal, the co-CEOs of Kalatico, are joining us here in the chat. Cassandra, welcome.
Great. Hello. How are you guys doing?
We are good. It's our usual Friday morning hangout. Thank you for joining us to talk about AR and all things tech. Jennifer, welcome. Nice to meet you. The Roni is here with us. And of course, you guys know Ted.
Hi, Ted. How are you?
How are you guys?
Always in your car, Ted.
Yeah, I'm on a road trip. We often do our podcast from wherever we happen to be at the moment.
I love that you have the car that drives itself. So it works so well.
Yeah.
Is your car moving right now, Ted? Is it self-driving?
No, this car does have some self-driving capabilities, but I'm in a rental car. I'm in North Carolina right now. But it has it has the lane assist stuff, but I'm not driving right now. I'm just stopped at the side of the road, literally on the side of the highway doing the podcast. So, but just, for our listeners' standpoint, from a state of background. So Jennifer and Cassandra and I have been friends for what seems like forever. I think it's probably 15 or so more years when I was introduced to them at the Sundance Labs, and we connected up with an amazing project that they have been working on. Talk about gestating. So we were just pontificating about the idea of bringing things to life in the time and space that it needs to cultivate and grow. And you guys with your project are the perfect example of that. You have been working on this steadfastly for years and years and years. And now you are really on the cusp of its first truly kind of in your face commercial dynamic right on the strip in Vegas. And the steps to achieve that are very, very complicated and remarkable. So maybe you want to start with a little of your background, how you became friends, what you are doing with this project, and other aspirations. That's kind of what we like to talk about on the podcast.
Great. Well, thank you, Ted, for that introduction. Cassandra, should I hop in and then?
Please do. Please do.
So how Cassandra and I came together is that we were both at Sundance in 2017. We were both producers at the time, producers and entrepreneurs, and we had projects at Sundance. We were approached by a mutual friend who had just seen this incredible installation at the New Frontiers building, and sort of showed us a short video, and we were both completely blown away by what we saw. And he was like, "You got to run up the street and get there. This is the best thing I've seen at Sundance this year." So we ran up there, and lo and behold, we enter into this absolutely incredible enveloping world, which was the inception of Particle Inc., a very small installation that really sort of showcased this original world of beautiful characters and stories, but also perhaps to us even more inspirational was the use of technology in storytelling. Extremely seamless, magical combination of a digital and physical world. And we both were totally blown away instantaneously. As the passionate storytellers and entrepreneuraholics that we are, we decided to go for it and started to build a company around this beautiful property, this beautiful world, but also really outstanding use, like I said, use of technology and storytelling. So that was the beginning of our journey together, and we've been partners ever since. It's been really such a strong partnership. Cassandra leads our tech, gaming, Web3 side of the business. I lead our live side of the business, but we make all decisions together. Obviously, are checking in with each other multiple times a day from wherever in the world we are that this business needs our attention. And that's our background and how we came together.
I love that phrase, entrepreneur-aholic. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that. And I'm putting that in my lexicon because Roni is an entrepreneur-aholic. And
I'm a heavy, can we create Entrepreneur-aholic Anonymous?
Yes.
You just can't stop starting companies. Like you need to look at an AA.
Exactly. It's funny. I just said that for the first time this week because someone that's working with us went through the experience here in Las Vegas and was really blown away by it. But he said, you know, this is really, really brave. This is a very brave thing to do, to open something like this in a market like this, in a place like this. And I said, you know, I think it's something that an entrepreneur-holic would do.
So can you tell us, can you be specific, please, about what's in Las Vegas and what the user experience is there?
Absolutely. So we have an immersive 360 live experience that has recently opened at the Luxor in partnership with MGM Casinos and Resorts. It is a mixed reality experience. It seamlessly combines the digital world, the animated world of Particle Inc. The characters in the world of Particle Inc. come to life in projection mapping, in augmented reality. We use a lot of other forms of interactive technology, but everything is completely melded into the real world environment. In other words, there's no middleware. You're not strapping anything on. You're not picking up pieces of tech and feeling like you're picking up pieces of tech. Everything is sort of melded into these everyday objects or everyday experiences. You pick up a mirror, you see a world in augmented reality, that sort of thing. It is totally narratively based. You're following a story that is driven by both physical and digital characters. And there are two different sets of experiences. There's an all-day experience, which is more like an exhibition experience where you can come in, untimed entry, spend as long as you want. And that's really about discovering our world and also going deeper into our augmented reality-driven mobile game. We have digital assets that you can carry with you into the experience and also take with you out of the experience. So, you know, like if you go to Disneyland and you get your t-shirt and all your merch with Particle Inc, you can get your digital asset and your digital asset can come with you and grow with you into all of our other products and the world that we're building. And then at night it becomes a show, which is more of a traditional showtimes, set experience. You're following a story and it's led by live performers.
Am I wearing a device or am I seeing these things with my naked eye?
You're seeing everything with your naked eye. And obviously you're looking through a lens to experience augmented reality, but you're not strapping anything on. Like I said, you're sort of picking up objects or you're using your mobile app.
I will actually tease, Charlie, I'll tease our fantastic sponsor, Zapper, because one of the things that I'm experimenting with in the background. So in the world of full disclosure, I'm an advisor with Jennifer and Cassandra to the project and have been for really since its inception. We all sort of became enamored with it. It's traveled through this fantastic road. I do my best to help them. And I'm looking at what I believe are the limitations of just using a phone to see things. And our friends at Zapper have this really cool little thing called Zapbox. So we're going to actually experiment with it a little bit to see if we can enhance the experience. It's still very much in the experimental zone. So talking about the entrepreneurial side of this, not fully baked, not ready for any critique yet, not ready for any kind of investment or press comments on it. It's just the art of experimentation and the sort of joy of learning how to do things better and more differently, which is kind of interesting. But the whole backstory of this is really fascinating. So before it was at the Luxor, it's been in the Art District in Vegas, and then it's had a couple of other venue attempts that have all had sort of various versions of success. So maybe Cassandra wants to dive because you've been in it really since ground zero, right? I mean, trying to figure out how to make this a business, which is kind of fascinating in and of itself.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I'm going to let Jen talk about where we were prior to the Luxor in the Arts District in downtown, kind of walk you guys through what is the proof of concept. Which came about, we were originally supposed to launch in New York City 2020. So we can all imagine what that actually looked like. In the heart of New York City, on 9th Avenue between 51st and 52nd, we had a building rented. It was going to be, you know, the next Sleep No More, you know, kind of like the advanced Meow Wolf meets Sleep No More, you know, tech kind of come to life, seamless world, multiple stories, a building, and wham, the pandemic hit. so So I'll let Jen kind of take it from there, but that was actually going to be where we originally were going to bring this to life. But the pandemic ended up being, you know, obviously we've all been through many trials and tribulations with the pandemic, but we're very grateful for having an incredible team that really stepped together and kind of went back to the drawing board, I'd say, and thought about kind of what really the business plan looked like and how we wanted to launch this product through these multi-platform experiences, and how we would approach that from a business perspective. So Jen, I'll let you kind of to chat about this as well. What I can say is where we did end up opening is on the TED stage in Vancouver in 2022.
Right.
And that is where we actually brought Particle Ink to life for the first time. So that was our world debut. And when we were asked to come and present at TED, which was such an honor to do that, you know, it was really about thinking about, you know, what is the stepping stones of a metaverse and how do you actually explain that to anyone? And you really can't. And so how do you actually experience that? And so what we did is we actually brought the whole entire amphitheater alive in augmented reality, projection mapping, and performance. And we actually live broadcast that at the same time. So it was quite a feat. Took a lot of work to bring that together. And I can tell you, Jen and I were holding our breath as Chris came out on stage and opened up the performance. but it went off flawlessly. And really, you know, you have a crowd there that's typically around 35 to 65. And talking about technology and AR and you know, potentially what a metaverse could look like in the future is really not something that is really in the lexicon of this particular crowd. But when they walked out of that experience, they came up to us and they were just like, wow, okay, now we start to see what the future of this possibly could be, right? Because of the experience of that. And I think this is what Particle Ink does. It gives you the experience of stepping into the 2.5 dimension, you know, into the next portal of what the future will be, the future of entertainment, and then how that technology can then transfer into different types of verticals and experiences.
So the name of the company is Kaleidoco. But the product name, the IP, the experience I'm buying a ticket for is Particle Ink.
Correct.
Exactly. We like to say that it's a little bit like Kaleidoco is Pixar and Particle Ink is Toy Story in that, you know, we're developing technology at the Kaleidoco level that, you know, we're thinking about it, you know, that technology is going to move beyond the entertainment sector. We really, when we think and focus on how we want to build within an augmented reality, we also think about applications outside of entertainment, health, travel, education, et cetera. But you know, it's the easiest way to understand the relationship, especially between Kaleidoco and Particle Ink.
Jen, why don't you share a little bit about Speed of Dark, which is the proof of concept, and what is the stepping stone to MGM partnership?
Yeah, right after TED, we opened, as Cassandra said, you know, during COVID, we were on a journey to find a new home or find a new way to bring our live experience to the world. And we were really fortunate in that that lease that Cassandra mentioned was actually a 10-year lease. It was you know, we were going for it, and the idea was really to build these live storybooks, if you will, these living graphic novels. And we always had the vision to bring those graphic novels then into a gaming environment through AR. So people are able to experience this world in brick and mortar, and they're also able to take it home with them, take it into their neighborhoods, take it on their travels, build a multiplayer world, and again, have digital assets that you can obviously own within the ecosystem, but also take with you outside of it, and really in this sort of this Tamagotchi type world, really grow with these digital assets. So that was always our roadmap. During COVID, we obviously, you know, we catapulted into the tech side of our business, focusing on you know, the game and the digital assets, which Cassandra will get more into. And then also, how do we take this amazing, beautiful show that we were 6 weeks away from loading in and reimagine it in a post-COVID world, in a world where, you know, you don't want to rely so heavily on a brick and mortar, you know, strategy. And because our world is so largely digital, it's actually quite I wouldn't say easy, but it's, you know, we have a competitive advantage in the sense of being able to be very mobile and nimble with our live experiences. So we took what we had built in New York, we reimagined it. Obviously, we opened heads, so that was a whole other kind of approach to a very specific challenge of how do you create immersive entertainment and an immersive environment and a mixed reality environment in a traditional proscenium theater. You know, that is also live broadcasted, which obviously is the biggest reach is the live broadcast. So how do you make it, you know, as enticing and exciting and communicate that innovation and technology on live broadcast, simultaneously making it an incredible experience for the people in the theater. So that was a very specific a specific strategy toward how we were bringing Particling to life. And then after that, we focused on bringing that New York story into a Vegas warehouse. We took over an abandoned garage in the Arts District of Las Vegas. We chose Las Vegas because our creatives are from Las Vegas, have been building a creative world here for 14 plus years now. It's an incredibly strong creative community, obviously. It's the, you know, arguably the home of live entertainment in the world, the hub of live entertainment in the world. And all of these people who are working on these shows are incredibly artistic, talented, creative people. So we really had the ability to grow within that community, and we had that support. Also, you know, financially, you know, if you are not on the strip, it's a relatively friendly environment to build in. So we were really excited about the Arts District itself, downtown Vegas, and the growth that we were seeing there. So we took over an abandoned warehouse, no sprinklers, no bathroom, literally a garage, a mechanical garage, and we turned it into a functional venue within 3 months. We had a 1-year lease, and the idea was to build this thing, let people really understand what it is that we were talking about, and at the same time, build the other sides of our business so that we could get to a point where we're opening this on a larger commercial level, and we do have digital assets in market. We do have a demo of a game that we've created. We have actually built a multi-platform in real life and virtual metaverse. And so that was the plan. We did it. It was very successful. We won the Best Immersive Entertainment Award from a Best Immersive Experience Award from the Themed Entertainment Association, which was a very big honor. That's an organization that's generally giving these sorts of awards to Disney and Universal and, you know, all the titans of, you know, IP and theme park. So for us as a very small indie company that self-funded this project, to be able to break through was really, really encouraging. And also just opened us up to a lot of these larger partnerships.
So now you're on the strip in Vegas in front of wide swath commercial audiences of various sort of different types of people and different sort of desires for entertainment. It's probably a slightly different crowd than you're going to get at the Art District, and you're just started these performances, right? So tell us how it's going. How is it feeling? How is it working? What are the audiences responding to? How is the MGM liking it all? Give us the dope on all that stuff.
It's going incredibly well. It's very, very exciting. I have to say, you know, it's been every single day is different here, and that's really exciting. Because we are truly building a living, breathing organism in the way that what we say at Kaleidico, and we've been saying since the very beginning, is we want to build a company based story living, not storytelling. And for us, that is at the center of everything we do and how we build. So coming into a Vegas environment like the Luxor that has a lot of different types of people coming through week to week, depending on the conference, depending on the show that's happening or the sporting event that's happening. You know, it's really very different ebbs and flows of an audience. It's unlike building something in New York or London or LA. So how do you create an environment that is able to react to what people want and the types of people that are coming through? What is their level of exposure with new types of storytelling with technology itself, with, you know, immersive entertainment. And so we're able to be really nimble and sort of, you know, adjust our experience accordingly. And also people are able to experience what they want, right? There is a choose your own adventure quality to what we're bringing to the table. And so if people just want to get deep into lore because they're super gamers and they want to play with our AR and they want to sort of have that experience, that can be their experience. If they just want to watch live performers and, you know, feel that they've been entertained in a more passive way, that's also an experience they can have. So we're learning how to lean into all of those aspects and be flexible with our audience. But it's been incredibly well received. You know, sort of, I have to say yet again, we are totally new, totally different, unlike anything that has come to Las Vegas, and frankly, unlike anything that has been produced. You know, yeah. we really you know, stand apart. And so, you know, there is a learning curve to educating an audience and, you know, sort of not overwhelming people with too many 360 immersive mixed reality. You know, there's a lot of, you know, you want to be really clear about just, this is an incredible experience that you need to come see. Right. And if you want,
what I'm hoping is that, like, for fans of this kind of entertainment, if you've seen Sleep No More multiple times, like I've have, if you've been to Meow Wolf multiple times, like I have, this is a no brainer. This is part of your journey of these kinds of entertainment that you're already enamored with. The real hope that I have is that people that have never even heard of Sleep No More or Meow Wolf that happen to be checking into the casino are like, what's this? And they go check it out. And then they tell their friends, or the person at the front desk is like, you're looking for something fun to do that's a little offbeat, that's a little different than going to a normal Vegas show. Go to see this. That's kind of what I think will hopefully take it to the next level. You know, it sort of broadens your audience a little bit.
In 20 minutes, I'm going to meet with the whole front desk of the Luxor. So I agree with you entirely.
Yeah. Love it. And how many people an evening, do you do what, two shows a night? And how many people can see the show at any given time?
We do two shows a night, Thursday to Sunday, and one show on Monday and Wednesday. So we're dark on Tuesday. We have a capacity of 150 people per show. But it's not really a capacity. I shouldn't even say that. Strike that from the record. It's really not about capacity. It's more about just the experience that we're putting on at any given moment. So obviously when we have, you know, for example, it's an amazing experience for a special event or groups. And if you have groups that are coming in, there's a different type of flexibility. You know, our venue holds up to 250 people at any given time. So there's flexibility there. And then all day long, 7 days a week, the Wanderlust experience is open. And that is the experience where you come and sort of just play within the environment, more driven with an AR gaming quest. It's the same. It has a very similar narrative structure to our show. But it's led by our animated characters in our land of luminosity, or in the 2.5 dimension, as we call it, the setting of the particle ink world, as opposed to live performers.
But, why don't you tell us a little bit about, go ahead, Charlie.
By the way, for those of you listening, I went to the Kalotico site, and up there in the top navigation bar is a link to particleinc.com. So if you want to get a good look at the graphics and some of the things that are going on in this show, bop on over there. That's a nicely done site. So how much is the ticket for this?
They start at $25 for the daytime and $62 for the evening.
And are you planning to go back to New York?
We absolutely want to come back to New York, and we're having many conversations about that. We are currently working on expanding to multiple other markets, and as well, obviously, through our game and our digital assets, really connecting all of these worlds.
Roni, I would love for you to see
Charlie, it. Charlie, I have a question.
Many, many of the Magic Leap experiences that a lot of your creative developers developed experimented with forms of light, you know, strings of light, bending light, using light and music. And this is kind of a real world adaptation of what you were driving into Headset. It's really quite fascinating. You love it.
I have to see it. I have a question for Jennifer, Cassandra. Like, it's a bit existential. Like, why are you doing this? Like, what is it about this stuff that inside you says, I need to go do this? Because it's like it's very experimental. It's very out there. You could be making films or traditional theater. Like, what pulled you into this?
So my answer to that, I mean, we have many of the same answers, but first of all, Cassandra and I, when we started working together, we both held a very strong belief that content creators and storytellers should be working simultaneously with entertainment technology developers, and that those two things should be hand in hand, part of the same thought. You know, they are two halves of the same pie. And so that is something that's been really driven us since the very beginning. And it's why we focus on the technology that we focus on, and through the specific story and world of Particle Link. And to be more specific, so there's that side. And then there's the side of, you know, at least for me personally, I've always been, my whole career has been about building intellectual property growth of original content and producing multi-platform content businesses from original story and original content. And when we set foot in that installation in 2017, I've never been more inspired and more sure that this is a world, a creative world that the entire globe would respond to. It has an utterly international appeal. It really opens for adults and really illuminates a child's imagination. You know, it's a really incredible piece of IP that I'm extremely proud to be on the team working on bringing it to life. Cassandra, I'll let you add your answer.
No, for sure. And then it's all of that and more personally for me as well. It is about always thinking about when was going to be the convergence of storytelling and technology in a way where the technology became seamless and fell away. And when we first stepped into this 12-minute experience, I completely forgot that the technology was there. I just fell into the characters, the world, the journey that I was on, and I walked out and I was completely sensorially my whole body, I could just feel that this emotion overcame me. And I said, okay, we're here. We're finally at a place where I'm starting to see the hardware and the software converge in a way where we can now start to really tell a story and take people on that journey. Because, you know, all this emerging technology, fun, it's very novel, you know, but often many times people don't come back to it. It's like, oh, that was kind of cool, but it doesn't really stick with them. But when you start to actually involve a really great storytelling experience, like the same way, the reason why you watch a movie over and over again, and yet when that technology falls away to it, then it's just enhancing that experience, right? And this was really kind of, that was the, for me, what, you know, personally walking into this and kind of my background of storytelling and also thinking about how do I always extend it beyond just that, you know, hour and a half experience of watching a film. I want to make sure people, you know, it sticks with them. They talk about it at the dinner table. They do something in their life and it reminds them of something, right? It comes back to somewhere. And that is when you start to really build something where it becomes more of a global experience, a community experience. And that's what this IP does. And really truly creating that multi-platform experience gives us the opportunity for many people to have this touch point beyond just the IRL kind of live experience as well.
So Charlie, one last comment on that. The reason I asked was a lot of the folks I worked with that, you know, in this space over the years, when you really go into it, it was like, yeah, because when I was a kid, I believed in fairies or something, or I had imaginary friends, or I just wanted to fly into that movie or be Peter Pan. And there was this promise you're made as a kid that like magical things are real. You grew up watching Disney movies or something. And like this whole area seems to be one of the first times, if you close your eyes to the technology, you're like, you're almost there. And I found that when you really push people, like, why are you doing this? I'm going to wrap up on this, Charlie. When I showed what we were doing to Bob Iger, we had Tinkerbell flying around in space and landing on a mirror and then spinning around and doing that like twinkly thing you do at the Disney Sunday night opening. Tinkerbell should always come out of the castle and fly into her magical pixie dust. And she did that in real space and then turned on a lamp and flew away. And you could just see for 3 seconds, the CEO of a giant company becoming a five-year-old kid who grew up watching, you know, Walt Disney. And I feel like that's why most people are in it. I was just wondering, like, if you get to the core of it, why are you guys really in this?
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And, you know, we also, Cassandra and I, we tell stories that we think the world needs and our whole careers. You know, we're not, you know, we haven't been chasing, you know, commercial sort of just commercially successful stories. Obviously that's been a drive for us, but you know, it's why are we telling the story and why is it important? And, you know, I think there's two things about that. One is that we were very, very excited, both of us, about the metaverse and about the promise of this sort of infinite digital world and all of the things that that can bring. But we both really, really care about the planet. And we really care about community. And we really care about social responsibility. And we wanted to build something that keeps people grounded in the physical environment and that enhances that environment, that makes us see the magic and the beauty and brings us back to our childhood, brings us back to what's important through the story and frankly, through the art. And so we have really been driven toward, you know, making this pioneering this type of metaverse, you know, that does keep us grounded in the physical environment. And that does keep us experiencing this with communities and you know, playing in the world with people around us and opening hearts and reminding us, you know, why we're all here and, you know, what really matters. And I think, you know, people feel very emotional when they come to our experiences for totally different reasons, but it really touches everybody that walks through our doors or that plays in our world, you know, or, you know, even with our digital assets that are still in their infant stages and are growing into fully formed digital beings. You know, people really, they're really connected to them. And there's an emotionality behind everything that we do that we think is supremely important.
That's why I've been in it for so long and never left.
The company is called Kaleidico. The show is called Particle Inc. It's at the Luxor, I guess, running indefinitely, 6 days
hopefully.
A week.
Yeah.
So hopefully I'll get a chance. Rony and I will get a chance to see it soon. It sounds fantastic. Really appreciate you guys. Great seeing you. Great story. Great having you on the show. And Ted and Rony, I guess we'll do this again next week.
Great. Thank you guys. Thank you. Thank you for having us. Take care. Looking forward to seeing you in Vegas.